Welcome to the Word Warren, Chapter 3, We Can Remember For You Retail. I have with me today Justin.
Hello.
And Hannah on the controls.
Oh, hello.
And also my sister Leah came.
Yay, I'm here.
Yay, super excited. This is like the most people we've had in the studio pre-COVID times.
And right?
It's weirding me out a little bit.
Right? Yeah. So this month, we're talking about sci-fi.
I'm so excited.
Which, for those of you who might not know, means science fiction.
Thank you. That's good. Yes, thank you.
Gotta be clear.
Like a hard term. Like, actually, I've always wondered that. Like, does sci-fi have to have a form of science, or is it just future-y?
We'll get into that when with the definition of sci-fi. Yes, commonly referred to as sci-fi. Sometimes speculative fiction is used as a term for sci-fi as well. Even though that's kind of more broad. Again, I did Wikipedia masterclass article. I did bookgenres.com, literarytermsnet, findmeanauthor.com, and neondystopia.com.
Not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor.
Yeah.
I just love Wikipedia mostly.
But if Wikipedia wanted to sponsor us,
that'd be okay.
Yeah. We can send them an email every 6 months asking for $5. Maybe that'd do the trick.
What I came up with for science fiction, so it's a genre of speculative fiction that typically deals with imaginative or futuristic concepts such as science and technology, space exploration, time travel, parallel universes, and extraterrestrial life. It's been called the literature of ideas because it often explores like the potential consequences of scientific, social, or technological innovations.
I feel like that's a lot to own. That's real.
Yeah.
That's real confident to call yourself that.
Other genres aren't full of ideas. It was like
both books, just ideas. I mean, I like the confidence, but
right, yeah. It was like I don't want to like be super negative towards sci-fi or anything, but it was like both easier and harder to define sci-fi because a lot of the articles, like, they just sci-fi authors and readers seem to take themselves very seriously. Like, I read sci-fi, you know. Like,
I don't read fantasy. Yeah. I read science fiction.
Yeah.
They like yell the word science and then whisper the word fiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, science fiction.
Yeah. Exactly.
That
feels
right.
So lots of like, it's all about thinking about the future or like trying to find the ramifications of, you know, our social development or whatever. I don't know. It's just all very high, lofty like language when I was reading lots of the articles. So there were two main classifications under the genre, so hard science fiction and soft sci-fi. In hard science fiction, it usually follows like scientific facts and principles, and they're usually inspired by quote-unquote hard sciences like physics, chemistry, astronomy, whereas a soft sci-fi would be either not scientifically accurate, or they're inspired by quote-unquote soft sciences like psychology, anthropology, or sociology.
Oh my goodness. Super interesting that like they claim the social sciences as well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no, that's ours too, but it's soft. So it's, we're going to take it, but we're going to like put it in the small bedroom. Right. Like, you don't get the master. You get the spare.
You guys are just paying rent.
Yeah. You're renting a room. Don't mess up the kitchen.
Yeah. And obviously there's a ton more subgenres in there, but those were the two main classifications that I found in most of the articles.
The more I think about that, the more like it's really interesting that those definitions give me the impression that the definition makers or the people in that environment feel like all of our problems are going to be solved with science.
Mm.
Right. And like, I don't know, like the science of the science fiction is the what is going to solve things, what is going to be like the, I'm doing an umbrella thing,
I'm
on microphone. But like the social sciences are the soft part, and they're not going to be the part that fixes, I don't know.
It's really interesting. That sets us into a, like...
Well, because they don't have lasers.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Are lasers even that great? Yeah. I mean, are they? Or like, they just look neat?
Sci-fi lasers.
Oh, okay.
Like, lightsaber, laser kind of things.
The lasers of ideas.
Yes.
The lasers of ideas. Yes.
Because like I've seen real lasers and they're fine.
I mean, I'm just...
do the same thing with a water jet.
Just V for Vendetta behind this mask is an idea, Mr. Creedy, and ideas are lasers.
That feels right.
It feels right, right?
Yeah, it flows. I thought that was part of the movie, and then I was like, wait a minute. There was no laser behind the mask.
He takes off his mask, and it's just a laser cannon. Spoilers.
Okay, this is...
All right, so brief history. There was a lot of information about the history of sci-fi, too. The one thing I found was, like, it dates back to, at least as far as if it includes space travel or extraterrestrial life, there was a story written in the 2nd century called A True Story by the Assyrian satirist called Lucian. And that was, they did lots of space travel into other worlds and extraterrestrial life. There was even artificial life mentioned in that book. So it's kind of
a true story. Yeah, checks out.
A true story, yeah. But modern sci-fi was really developed like during the Age of Enlightenment, which is like the 17th and 18th century, especially with like when the form of the novel like really took shape.
Okay.
And so that was like lots of New Atlantis by Francis Bacon, which was 1627, and then Somnium by Johann Kepler, which was 1634.
And how much science was there for them to utilize in those novels?
Well,
at that time?
It's mostly just the science of the time.
Yeah.
Speculative science of, what's the future going to hold when we can do this? It's why so much, even sci-fi written in the 40s and 50s is so bizarre because they're trying to build off this base of science that they have available to them and look to the future and be like, this is what we can do with this. We can totally make cities out of vacuum cleaners.
I mean, but they had vacuum cleaners to base it on. Yeah. Like in the 1600s, there was no combustible engine. How were they getting to the stars?
By the power of the space winds.
Space winds.
That's why I think speculative fiction was the forerunner for sci-fi, because they were just kind of making wild guesses.
They didn't have soap. Did they have soap?
There was, backing it up to anthropology. Throughout human history, there have been various medicinal plants and other things that humans have used for soap because they create a lather. So people had soap.
Yeah, but like the acids from the fats are important to kill germs and clean things, right? And they didn't have that until some tribes had it, right?
Some medicinal plants do it.
It was like 1800s before soap.
I mean,
because I've thought about this.
We're talking about Renaissance era Britain. So yeah, no, they didn't have soap, but the rest of the world did.
It's like the rest of the world did, but not the center of the like modern world at that time.
Ooh, see, that goes, nope, we can't talk about this on this podcast, because that's not what this podcast is about.
Yeah. The term science fiction didn't really come into like usage until more recently, like during the 17th century, especially after works like Frankenstein or The Last Man by Mary Shelley, or like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne.
Those are science fiction.
Yeah. Huh. And so they're still considered science fiction, even though like our technology nowadays surpasses anything that they could have come up with back then, but they were looking towards the future or a future, trying to like come up with what they thought it might be like.
I mean, he uses electricity to reanimate a corpse. That's really sci-fi.
Exactly.
I just never think about it that way. And I was thinking about that this morning. Like, there's so much that is probably sci-fi that I think about as, I don't know, like dystopian. Like, is Brave New World sci-fi?
Yeah, that would be considered sci-fi.
But we categorize it as general fiction, or do we put that in the sci-fi section?
I guess that one technically is over in... That's where you get into weird things, too, because Kurt Vonnegut is in general fiction, but, like, Slaughterhouse-5 has aliens and time travel and stuff in it, so... So we shouldn't have genres. We just shove everything by author.
Oh, this is your new thing. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
That makes me feel overwhelmed.
I like it.
I don't.
I like it.
Yeah. I would not enjoy going into a bookstore if it was just all of these books are alphabetized by author. We're not gonna tell you what any of them are about. I would not go into bookstores anymore because I would be overwhelmed immediately upon entry.
See, I get overwhelmed by like people's horrible categorization. The like themes they pick for their categories sometimes. Like,
see, I like basic categories. I don't think we should have 18,000 categories. I think it should be like fiction, nonfiction, science fiction, fantasy, and that should be it.
Well, you're leaving out horror, and you're leaving out horror action and thriller.
Horror can be fiction, or science fiction, or fantasy, depending on the horror book.
So we should we should have no categories.
We should have some.
And some only the ones that Hannah picks. I got it. Got it. I got it figured out.
I'm just
it's
saying.
Never going to be clear cut.
Well, just they all will still have keywords, right? Like, this has sci-fi in it. It also has romance, and it also has some horror, right? But it's just shelved by author.
I like it.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I read authors. So that's what I like actually do, is I'll find an author. I try to read their first book. And if I like it, I'll try to read everything they wrote in the order that they wrote it. Because I started reading Stephen King when I was a kid, and he hides all those little Easter eggs.
Right.
And if you don't read them like in order, then you don't sort of pick up all the little like sub-world stuff. And I didn't want to miss that when I was a kid, and I still don't know.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So I do read authors. So I like it.
Thank you.
I also don't want to wander around a sci-fi section and be confused by all the words. Like, I don't know.
Oh, see, that's my favorite part, though, is wandering around a section, being like, I want to read fantasy book today. And I just go to the fantasy section, and I wander around, and I look at all the covers, and I pull books off and read the back and go, no, I don't want this one. Yeah, I want this one. And grab books. And
yeah.
But if I was going through there and I pulled a true crime book out of it, I'd be like, no.
Well, we could separate it fiction and nonfiction.
What's wrong with true crime?
Nothing's wrong with true crime, but I want to read about dragons. I want to read about wizards, not about murder.
Oftentimes, when there are wizards, there is murder.
Yes, but I don't want to read about the exploits of Detective What's-His-Face and how they solved the crime. Not today.
What if it's a wizard detective? That exists, right? Isn't there like that whole...
Yeah, to the Dresden Files.
See?
The Dresden Files, yep.
Detective wizard.
But it's not true crime.
Not yet.
And then I was just going to highlight a couple of subgenres that I found when I was doing my research. Because like you mentioned, dystopia. So oftentimes dystopia and utopia, they seem to come up in the same reference because they kind of are just the antithesis of each other.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know why. It's weird. Like, the opposites are together inside of something that's speculative. So you have to be speculating the future one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, I can do it both ways. And let's just talk about them in the same sentence. That, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a lot of guessing.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about dystopia and utopia because I've read a lot and I like it. But when I was trying to, like, do the definition of it was, like, very confusing. It was, like, something about the author's ethos and the philosophy of... It was too complicated for me. That's one of my things. I don't know what... I'm not 100% sure what ethos was.
Was there, like, and when you looked up sci-fi, were there just a lot of, like, unnecessarily hard words in all the descriptions? So it was, like...
Yeah.
So it was written by
Poe. Can I just say that the only thing I ever want to talk about... The only thing I ever want to talk about when we talk about Poe is how much Jules Verne loved him.
Oh, yeah.
Jules Verne is a nonsense writer. Have you read, Journey to the Center of the Earth? He talks about grass and dirt for 5 chapters. They're walking to the center of the earth and they're all looking at the ground talking about rocks. It's nonsense. I don't know why people think that's a good book.
Because it's a quote, classic. Unquote, and therefore people like it by default.
Who decides what these classics are?
We're gonna have an entire episode on classics.
It's gonna be a two-parter. Get ready for that, because I'm gonna argue just top to bottom all these classics.
Good.
Freaking Catcher in the Rye. Get out of here.
Ethos is a Greek word meaning character that is used to describe the guiding beliefs or ideals that characterize a community, nation, or ideology. Google.
It's not even that helpful, right?
No, so it's the ideology of the writer. Right?
So they're...
The writer's ethos.
Okay.
Yeah.
So ethos is dogma?
Kind of,
but
yeah.
Like less religious?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so a dystopian one would be them writing opposite of what their ideology is.
So they think the world should be this way, and they write a dystopian based on it not being that way, or a utopian based on it being that way.
Right.
So ethos is just their self
and
their beliefs. We could have just said beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
but why use beliefs when a Greek word will do?
You know, that's what they say about Greek, right? It is the most easy to understand and helpful of all the
languages. I mean, if we spoke Greek, it would make perfect
sense. I'm just assuming that's what they said. It was all Greek. So. Okay, so. Yeah.
So, like, dystopian futures usually have, like, oppressive governments, or they're, like, in a society in some sort of decline, basically. Whereas utopia is more like an ideal society where things flourishing.
Does that mean that 1984 is a science fiction book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somebody once explained to me, because it was the Star Trek, Star Wars thing, and I don't really like Star Wars, and I do like Star Trek. Because, and somebody explained it to me. One is like utopian. Star Trek is working towards utopia, and Star Wars is the dystopian, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Star Wars is also more, like we talked about last time, science fantasy.
Right.
Like because they're very science fantasy, whereas Star Trek is based in science.
And I like that. I don't read a lot of science fiction or fantasy, just because I just haven't gotten into it really. But I do like science fiction better because the books that are based in science, I can understand because I have a general grasp of science. Like they'll talk about it, like a holodeck, right? Holograph deck makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not like the Mirror of Whimsy or whatever. And I gotta remember what that means. And it's just easier to connect for me.
It's not kyber crystals.
See, what is that?
It's what they use to make lightsabers.
Is it? Yeah. I thought they used their, like...
It's a crystal. It's a crystal bodies. That goes into
their force power.
Energy juice flows a lot better than
both
force.
Yeah, both yes, right? Because it's a crystal that goes into the lightsaber that they channel force energy through to make the lightsaber work.
Oh, okay.
I have never read any Star Wars stuff, but I know that.
Because science fantasy came up again when I was doing science fiction, obviously, because it's a blending of the two. And one of the findmeanauthor.com quoted Arthur C. Clarke that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes.
So that's kind of the idea behind science fantasy.
I disagree with that statement wholly.
If technology is so far advanced that you can't actually understand how it works, it is indistinguishable to the layman from magic.
Yeah.
I don't think we live in a society where that happens now. Like, so, you can just Google how does this work, and it tells you the science.
But
it comes out of a box and not out of your fingertips.
So let's say, though, that we met an extremely advanced race, an extremely advanced alien species.
Yeah.
Who had... We didn't know this, but let's say they had augmented technology to their brains to where they could actually use levitation and telepathy and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't know that was technology that could exist.
Uh-huh.
That would seem magic to us. If they just started floating stuff around with their hands.
Or talking telepathically.
It wouldn't seem like magic to me. I'd think that they would have science doing that. I would be like, oh, hey, where's their machine?
Where's their machine? There are no machines. Like, what if there are no machines?
Well, maybe they're tiny machines, right? That's what I would assume. Oh, nanobots or something, right? I wouldn't be like, no, they're obviously magic. They're gifted from some deity. That's not where I leap to.
But you are also not the main subset of humanity, because humans are weird.
I'm a person. I'm sure of that.
But you're a very...
I've seen doctors.
But you're a very analytical person.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people that are not... analytical to that degree. There are a lot of people that are much more willing to believe in fanciful stuff, that are a lot more willing to believe in the idea of magic or things like that.
Okay. I cannot have faith in anything. I can't just, like, the word faith, the definition of faith, I can't have that.
Yeah.
I can't just, like, believe something.
And there are a lot of people that are like that. But there are an equal amount of people that would see somebody float something with their mind and be like, magic!
So when people see like Chris Angel doing his little spinny dance, they're like, that's obviously real magic. It's not connected to any technology at all.
Yeah.
Like the first time they see him, they're like, oh my God, he's possessed.
There are some people, they're just people.
All right.
Bloom.
I mean, how do we change that? do we have a plan for making that different or?
Better education.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Really?
Because I feel like that's the wrong reaction. I mean, not to like be rude to anybody, but if you're automatically like jumping to the conclusion that something has existed in a world that you've never seen before.
On the vein of sci-fi, like, I feel any culture that progresses more and more towards technological advancements, eventually the superstitions start to drop out.
Okay.
Because the more you can explain with science, the more science is the fallback to explain.
I mean, I'm gonna disagree with that. I'm not trying to be like contrarian,
first you're like, oh, all of my immediate assumptions would be science stuff, and then you're like, no, 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 but it wouldn't be.
No, I'm not saying right now society, we have a lot of information, and there are a lot of people who are disagreeing with very hard, clear science right now.
But we're still out of an era.
We have lasers.
We do.
We got lots of different kinds of lasers, even.
We do.
We have ones that burn you and ones that don't and ones that can send messages. And we have handfuls of lasers.
But
we're
at the point where we should believe in medicine. In the relative spectrum of human existence.
Okay.
Technology as we know it is very new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's barely been 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, right? We were just talking about soap.
So all of those ingrained cultural superstitions and things like that, it's going to take a very long time to wash out. We don't have the soap for it yet. That's
what I'm saying. I feel like we do. I think it's called books. That's soap for your brain. Rub it on there.
Books and education and knowledge and the access to those things is also very relatively new in the existence of human culture. Because for a long time, that kind of stuff was only reserved for the wealthy, the ruling class, people deemed worthy of accessing that knowledge. And so we still have large portions of our world that don't have access to that.
Yeah, to some extent, that's still true. A lot of, access to education and stuff like that.
I didn't know that. I don't know how much access people have because I don't know.
Even in our country, even in America, there are still underprivileged communities and stuff that don't have access to the types of education that everybody else does.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people that can't go to college, that never will go to college. There's a lot of kids who drop out of high school halfway through because they need to help support their family.
Right. Yeah.
So the education isn't always there. Mm. And that's something that we have to fix first.
So it's a socioeconomic problem, like almost everything else.
So
this isn't a political podcast. Podcast about books.
Hey, this really connects to books, though. I mean,
It does. It's important. Access to books is super important.
Yeah.
And access to all types of books, too, because it's not just the fact books. It's not just the nonfiction books. Science fiction, fantasy, mystery, regular fiction, the classics.
All of those,
expand people's viewpoints beyond themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that it teaches you to look through other people's eyes, to have other people's experiences.
I think the first step towards any culture advancing beyond superstition is full-scale literacy in the populace.
Okay.
Yeah. Which we have not achieved yet.
No. I've lived in counties on the west side of Washington that have really low literacy rates. Right. And it's just, across the board. It's super interesting. There's these pockets where literacy is not super high. And I didn't notice it day to day, right? I just didn't have a lot of people to talk to about books.
But now we're moving into an era of audiobooks. We're moving into an era where even if you might not be able to read the book because you have a learning deficiency or you're, dyslexic or you just never learned how to read or you just don't enjoy sitting down and spending 3 hours reading a book, you can still get that information now.
Yeah.
And I think that is huge.
Yeah. I love what they're doing with graphic novels too.
Yeah.
They're really expanding that graphic novel.
And they're doing tons of they'll adapt novels and stuff into graphic novel form now too.
And they're doing those YA graphic
novels. Especially classics. Oh.
I mean, maybe they should, but the classics I would like better as a graphic novel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. They're a lot fun. The classic graphic novels, quote, are really nice. They're really fun to read. They're short. They're easy to understand because they've broken it all down into imagery and easy to follow words.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a hard time reading what people call classics. I just don't like a lot of them. And I think it might connect to there's just a lot of really unlikable characters. There's a lot of hyper negativity. I mean, Catcher in the Rye. That kid, right? Why would I want to hear him talk in my head for hours? It's just not what I want. But I think now we're moving into more likable characters, more digestible stuff. There's a better formula. We should talk about sci-fi. I'm sorry.
We should talk about sci-fi, guys.
I just remembered we have run a podcast.
No, we just sit up here for an hour and talk and about whatever, we want.
This is very much like all the conversations we end up accidentally getting into downstairs on the floor.
All of that to say, support your libraries and local independent bookstores. No.
Yeah. I agree. Yes, that's a great point for the end of this. Don't make books less accessible.
Yeah.
No, make them more accessible.
Yeah. Utopia and dystopia, that's what we were talking about.
Do you have a preference for utopia, dystopia?
I really like dystopian fiction. Yeah, I think a lot of a couple of the ones that I have on my recommendation list are dystopian future type stuff.
Are there a lot of utopian science fiction books?
I couldn't find a ton of utopian ones. The one that coined the term utopia was a book called Utopia by Sir Thomas More. That was like the one that kept popping up everywhere.
A book called Everything's Fine in the Future.
Yeah.
There's just two thumbs up on the cover.
Yeah. And Aldous Huxley. Thumbs. Yeah, robotic thumbs. Yeah. Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World, which would be dystopian, but he also wrote Island, or The Island, I think, that was a utopian.
I've never read The Island.
Yeah.
I read Brave New World and it was super weird, and so I just stopped reading what he wrote.
Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I read A Brave New World too, and I was like, okay.
I don't want to keep doing this to myself. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I read it. It was interesting. I know the story.
And
I can get all the references now. I went on a dystopian like reading streak once, and that was one of them. It's just weird.
I just picked that one up out of when I was in high school. My science teacher had a bookshelf in his classroom. And it was on there, and it was Brave New World and 1984 together. And I read Brave New World, and then I didn't read 1984, and I just put it back in.
They should definitely put 1984 first in that book
if it's gonna be
like, that's just my personal opinion. I love 1984.
I've got to admit that I've never actually sat down and read all of 1984. I know the entire story because I've read articles about it and I've watched the weird movie that they made about it, but I've never been so compelled to sit down and just read the book.
I think you can get the experience from watching a movie or reading any articles. It's because it isolates you in the writing.
Yeah, it really because pulls you into... never finished it because it freaked me out.
Yeah.
I was stressed and can't do this, and I had to stop.
If they did the movie like they did the book, it'd be a slow burn, right? Mm-hmm. It just like slowly creeps into every... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because it works its way into every decision, every step he takes eventually, right?
Like, it's like, it starts making you think about all the things, like, easy ways that you could just be manipulated into being, like, just the worst person, like, oh, God, I don't
which
know.
Is it crazy, because that social media is doing that,
right? Yeah.
YouTube algorithms are manipulating us in a way. Mm-hmm. We're experiencing some of that control, not on purpose with any, like, I don't think it's on purpose. I didn't write the algorithms and put them out there. But it doesn't seem like it's on purpose. Like, people aren't trying to, like, manipulate us. Some people are using those tools, right, to affect political things.
You just really want to turn
you just really want to that.
Do I? Or do I just read the news?
Okay, so I'd then like to... also... No.
Okay, so then.
I just like to, just because I'm a theater nerd, bring up a theater thing, because I've never read 1984, but anybody talks about it, it always makes me think of The Pillow Man, which was one of the first theater experiences I had where it like really like affected me, and which is why I love theater, because it's just about a man that's writing fictional books, but then there's murders happening, and then the police come and basically think that he's doing it, and it's a police state. But you get so little information because it's just through his interactions with the police that you find out the world of this that he's living in. And it's just...
Yeah, that was a really good...
It was
good,
so freaky. I just love that.
So he's like isolated by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you only get the what he's writing, and you only get his like internal view of things. And then it trickles in with the police. Like, it builds the world slowly. Interesting. That's super cool.
Yeah.
And it is... I mean, I don't want to spoil it, so I'll just ask anyway. So I'm gonna. Is it like his fiction affecting the world? Is that kind of the?
So basically, what it is because they're interrogating him and trying to get him to confess to something that he hasn't done. And then they're using these really horrible tactics, which are to, what is it, torture his brother, who is mentally disabled.
Super.
It turns out he ends up confessing, but because his mentally ill brother was the one that was doing it.
Yeah.
And so he confesses so that his brother can, you know, and it's just, yeah, that's the world that they live in. And that's how you, like, are just like, I hate that world. Yeah. But it just, when I watched that, we did it in college at CBC for one of the summer showcases, and I was doing the sound, and I had a little bit of an anxiety attack at one of the performers, because obviously we do the rehearsals beforehand, so like I got used to it eventually, but it was just like I was just like, oh god, I don't know if I can watch this whole play.
Does that connect to like a fear you have about the world?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you fear it's going to become a police state?
Oh, yes, I do.
Huh. Okay, I'm going to move on to something a little more on the light side. So, space opera.
Space opera!
I don't know what that is.
So, all right, space opera is, it basically,
seems exciting.
It emphasizes warfare, melodramatic adventures, interplanetary battles, romance, and risk-taking. So it's just like epic. It's like an epic fantasy, but
Star
sci-fi.
Wars is a space opera.
Oh,
space
opera, yeah. I don't think I like them.
And it usually, so people think that the term for space opera comes from opera, but it actually is more of a play on the term soap opera because they're very melodramatic. And
okay,
like
so
everything.
Space
like,
soap.
Yeah.
Yes.
It all
yes.
comes back around
to
soap, you guys.
Okay, so the title for this episode is We Can Remember It For You Retail, but it's just going to be soap.
It's just going to be soap.
We can call it future soap.
Future soap.
Like, what kind of soap do robots use? We're asking the hard questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
So, like, the Honorverse by David Weber, I think is one of the, yeah.
There's a lot of books in that series. Would
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy be a space opera?
I think so. I think it has a little bit of space opera. It's also comics.
Well, yeah.
Science fiction, too. But, yeah, I think it has
I've never read that either. I know. Everybody gets super mad when I say that.
No, like,
that's
not
why
I just get
it.
Sad.
Justin, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
There's lots of books out there, guys.
There's so many books. Really. There's so many books.
And everybody, like, that's one of the books that, have we talked about, like, staging your desk? Have I talked about how, I used to work at a big, like, online retailer, and the building held 1,000 people, and everybody had a cubicle, and, you would walk by their cubicle, and you would see these, like, staged sections of books, right,
yeah.
Where it's all just, like, the hardest stuff to read possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Hitchhiker's Guide is in that staged like section a lot. Like, people want you to know that they've read it. And that just gives me an away message.
It just
me
turns you off. Yeah. Yeah.
That.
I can understand.
That's why I haven't read Vonnegut, right? Is because everybody who has read Vonnegut, like, wants to, like, rub your face on the book. Right? There's no book, like, you turn in circles holding the cover out so everybody can. It's just, it's a lot. And I don't know why they're doing that, but I don't want to become that.
Right. Yeah.
And so. I just avoid it. See, but it's a good book. Everybody loves it. And everybody gets happy to have read it.
Yeah.
Eh. No?
Well, I have a recommendation for you when we get to it.
Okay. We talked about in, like, the first episode, I think there are books that people should read. Like, I'm like, I think you'd really enjoy this book. I think you should read it. But if people don't want to read those books.
Right, yeah.
Whatever.
I mean, if they don't want to read it, then they probably shouldn't read it because they're not going to get the message from it anyways that they would have got it. Like, if someone forces me to read, Winter of Our Discontent, right?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to enjoy it. I don't want it. Yeah. Like, I already didn't want to read it. That's why I haven't read it.
The Tale of Two Cities? Is that? Or is it actually
is so
called
big.
The Winter of Our Discontent?
Isn't there? What is the know. One?
Because
it starts out with
the
opening
it was
line.
It was
Dang
the
it.
Summer
okay.
of Plenty.
Okay.
It was the Winter of Our Discontent.
Yeah.
What is the... Okay, hold on a second. There's a Steinbeck book that is about some grumpy dude. In a grocery store.
You're gonna have to
narrow that down.
Alright, it wasn't Tortilla Flats. I can't remember.
I'm trying to think of
something discontent, something.
Maybe it is called I've never heard
I
of
don't
it.
Know. Yeah. I started reading it, it was just a dude complaining about his life, and I was like, why is this a book? I can do this myself.
Because they didn't have online blogs back then.
Oh man, those would be the best. Like a 1930s online blog. Finally, you can afford some soap. LOL. I'd be into that. I'd... That sounds great. Like and subscribe.
Space operas.
Sorry. So I haven't read too many of those, but and sort of along the same lines, there's a subgenre called planetary romance also, which is sort of like space opera as well. They have a lot of things in common that they're very like melodramatic and everything's like a grand adventure, whereas space operas are usually more focused in actual interstellar like travel, or they happen mostly in space, like space battles and stuff, whereas planetary romance would be something that's set on an alien world and it's more about the environment stuff, like sort of like the Barsoom novels by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
So, I know of so many of these titles, mm-hmm. but I have not read a single one.
Yeah, I have never read any, because like for space operas, they also said like the Ender's Game series and Foundation by Asimov, which I've never read any of the ones that were mentioned for space operas, but I did read the first three books in the Barsoom one, and I really enjoyed them. I mean, there's problematic stuff in there because they were written in like the 30s or something. I don't know, but I still really enjoyed them. So John Carter of Mars is what they are. But
I read the Ender's Quartet. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
The covers of John Carter of Mars is they're classic.
They're classic. Yeah.
Classic sci-fi covers.
Yes.
By classic sci-fi covers, you mean they should be on the side of a van?
Yes.
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 Like a 1980s Dodge.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one I made notes on about was cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk.
Pretty popular, especially now there's that cyberpunk game that just came out and everybody's
I mean cyberpunk was a tabletop RPG for a long time. I think written in like the 1980s 1990s
yeah. 80s I think is when it started.
So this one also kind of falls under the dystopian umbrella though too, because it's advanced technology, but it's like more urban. There's always like super powerful mega corporations, and like it's like deals with like gritty underworld illegal trade and gangs and vice.
Hacking and freaking and all
right
that
yeah yeah
stuff. I just did karate hands.
Karate hands, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I hack.
Medium.
I described it. I let the viewers with the ear viewers know.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Ear viewers.
Yeah, okay. That's what they're called now. That's yeah. It. Uh-huh. That's
okay,
it.
I'm not going to refer to them as listeners anymore. thank you for tuning in, ear viewers.
I like it. Change approved.
Change approved. Feels weird to say.
That's how you know it's right.
So examples of that would be Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Pretty much anything by Philip K. Dick. He wrote a lot of cyberpunk, as well as William Gibson's Sprawl trilogy, and then Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson, which Snow Crash is so good.
I've heard of
so bizarre.
It's so though. Bizarre, but it's really good.
I
still haven't finished it.
Yeah.
Because we started reading it. We were listening to it. I did air quotes, sorry.
You're viewing it. You're viewing it.
On a road trip, and we just had never gotten back to it, but yeah. it's really good though.
I think I'd like to try cyberpunk, so I want to get some after this. I want to get recommendations from you for that.
Okay,
so I think that'd be interesting.
So there, let's go into our recommendations now. Maybe I'll start with our guest,
our special guest.
Oh, I get to go first.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to be one of those things where I'm pretty sure two of my recommendations or my favorite books are going to be on Sarah's list, but let's... Okay. So, my first one is The Tommyknockers by Stephen King.
Whoa.
A lot of people automatically assume Stephen King's horror, but The Tommyknockers, I would say it's sci-fi horror, but that's, like, my favorite genre anyway, so I just love that book. Like,
that was a good book. I hadn't put it together as being science fiction.
Yeah.
Ooh, I want to hear more about sci-fi horror.
Yeah, oh my god. Well... It's, like, my favorite genre of movies, so, like, Alien and Pandorum and anything like that.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I love it.
Event Horizon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Event Horizon is one of my favorite movies. Oh, like, my God. I love Event Horizon.
So good.
But they have, I didn't know there were a lot of sci-fi horror books.
Actually, I don't know, because that's really the only one I've read that I would consider. Because, like, I was even looking through my books, and I was like, what sci-fi books have I read? And then was, the last one that I thought of. I was like, The Tommyknockers, of course it's sci-fi. It's got aliens in it.
There has to be more sci-fi.
But there's got to be more. Haven't done the legwork, because I just like to watch it so much that I never thought about trying to find books about it. But this actually made me think of it. I was like, I need to read more of it, because I love that book.
Would I Am Legend be sci-fi horror?
I feel like I Am Legend borders on like science fantasy. It has to do with a plague, so I mean that's kind of sci-fi. Yeah. But
for the original book, I would say no. But the way they did it for like the Will Smith version of the movie, it would lean more towards sci-fi horror.
Okay, because in the book, it's more vampire.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I was going with it. I was like, it's like much more vampires than it is zombies and. Yeah.
And vampires are fantasy?
Yeah, usually they're fantasy.
There's horror. A lot of hesitation here.
They're fantasy horror. I would always and horror. Yeah, because when we talk about horror next week, because I think for a book to be a horror novel, it kind of has to have the intent to cause dread or to frighten somebody.
Would World War Z be science fiction horror?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Yeah, definitely.
Because I love that book.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't read that.
I've never read that one, so I would.
Have you read it?
I haven't, no.
Good. One person's not going
to
groan at me for that.
It's now officially on my list of things to recommend.
There you go. All
right. On your list, you have it written.
Yeah.
For the ear viewers.
For the ear viewers.
They don't need to know.
But I want them to. They don't need to, but I feel like they should have the option.
My blank piece of paper.
We're trying to create a police state and control information.
So my second one is Nightfall by Isaac Asimov.
So good.
So good.
What is it
about? So it's set on a planet where they have 7 suns, so they never experience nightfall. So they never have, the closest that they ever get to true darkness is when 6 of their suns are down, and then their red dwarf is up, and that's as close to darkness as that they've ever experienced. Every like 1,000 or 2,000 years, apparently, they have a nightfall where all 7 suns go down, and it's coming up. It's the first time that anybody's done any sort of astronomy on their planet, and they're like trying to study the suns, and they figure out that, oh god, they're gonna go down. But it's at the same time that an archaeological dig is going through, and they've found ruins from the last nightfall.
It sounds like you're explaining Riddick.
I was just gonna say, this sounds like pre-Riddick.
Yeah, right. Isn't that what happens in Riddick exactly?
Except the entire planet is already dead by the time they get there.
That's so true.
This is what happened to the planet to before the planet Riddick.
Pre-muscles Riddick.
Yeah.
Because that's like the. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happens.
That's
in Riddick.
Exactly,
I mean,
what is. Happens.
There's only 3 suns on that planet.
Yeah.
And they've got, and 7. They even like have barely figured it out, right?
Yeah.
You can tell that they just figured out.
But
the
like
suns
those people,
didn't.
Yeah, they weren't there.
Like in Riddick, they've crash landed on the planet.
Yeah.
They didn't know, and then they're like.
But like the ruins, you can tell that they had just built their first little model.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And it's at an archaeological dig.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
yeah, it is.
We got some explaining to do.
Riddick.
They took out like half the suns. It's fine.
That one occurs more often too, because it's 100 days or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or not even the 100 days. I can't remember.
I thought it was like every couple of years.
That would make sense. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because they had like a civilization there. If it was every like 100 days, they probably wouldn't have built buildings. So it'd just been.
Well, it was just the archaeological team that had come before.
And Riddick?
That's what I thought.
I think so. Well, I mean, there was like a village with a well and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a really good book. That could maybe even be considered sci-fi horror because
people don't believe
the scientists when they're saying this thing is going to happen.
Well, that's weird. What's that like?
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's like all this.
Tone it down, Justin.
You can't. Police state.
You're mute you. I have the power.
And give Leah a panic attack. You're trying to impress me.
My next one is called Mission to the Unknown by John Peel. That is a Doctor Who novelization. That one, I gotta like make it a caveat because it doesn't have any of the cast of Doctor Who in it. It's one of their lost episodes, but like it was at a time when like none of the people were gonna be able to do the show. So they were like, well, we'll just make this 2-episode arc that's gonna just precursor to the episode. So it's about the guy that, spoiler alert, they find his body in the Doctor Who episode or whatever, and he's like fighting the Daleks by himself, and it's just really good. I think I would consider. Okay, now I'm like, I have all sci-fi horror because that's what it is.
Do they call Doctor Who books, do they like call it the Whoniverse? Is that...
They should.
That popped right into my head, and I feel like that's the right thing.
No, yeah.
It's in the Hooniverse. I'm pretty sure they just call it the Doctor Who universe, but they should call it the Hooniverse. It
seems like a missed opportunity.
I will never call it that from now on.
We should get a new shelving tag. Universe, yes.
Get on it, Sarah.
Yes.
So all sci-fi horror and on accident, which is
I mean,
a journey of self-discovery. Yeah. That's what this was.
So I just have one more that I have. It's not a book recommendation; it's an author recommendation. So it's kind of like, is Douglas Adams.
Oh yeah.
And this is why this was the recommendation I was going to give to you. So if you don't want to read Hitchhiker's Guide, he did a Doctor Who novel called Shada. He wrote the original screenplay for the show too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they novelized it. And so if you want to experience Douglas Adams' genius writing without reading Hitchhiker's Guide, because he just has like such a weird way of writing, and I just love it.
So I've never seen a full episode of Doctor Who.
Okay.
But the nice thing is, you don't have to.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's
especially for these ones, because like Shada was with the fourth Doctor, so like back then nothing was like go into each other or whatever. Like so, each episode was kind of a standalone.
Okay.
So
okay.
Like there's stuff in Doctor Who that if you haven't watched some of the episodes, you might be like, where did these guys come from? But it's never enough for you to not understand what's happening in the episode or book that you're reading. You don't need the context necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because whatever they're focusing on in that book or that episode, they explain that thing.
Okay.
And the other stuff is just tangential stuff that you're maybe like, that sounds interesting. Where is that from?
See, that's a level of a consideration that I don't think a lot of other sci-fi I've encountered has, where they just sort of like, hey, I mean, Star Wars is, I think, a great example for me, right? Like, they just jump into stuff. And, like, I watched a Star Wars once, and I was like, oh, hey, this is the story. Then I took what I took from it. And then I watch it with my brother, and he's like, no, when he says this, he really means this, because 100 years ago this happened. It's like, how am I supposed to know that? Yeah. Why is that there?
I jumped into Doctor Who, the show, with Chris Eccleston. So he's, like, the ninth Doctor, I believe?
Yeah, the ninth one.
So I didn't have any context for the previous eight Doctors. I jumped in. There was stuff I was like, I don't really understand what that is, but it's not important to the episode. And then later on, they explain other stuff to you. But each episode is so easy to follow that you can even watch it completely out of sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And still be like, okay, I feel like maybe I'm missing some context, but this episode makes absolute sense. I get that they're discovering water on Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I started like the first one, because I try to do everything in order because I have OCD.
There's so much Doctor Who to watch.
And it was very...
Because I started with Chris Eccleston, and then I learned that he was the ninth Doctor, so I have been rewatching. And that's why I've read all these novelizations, is because there's so many lost episodes that you cannot watch. So I read the novelizations.
How are they lost? Like
they had a wiping policy at BBC, and they would just retape over old episodes.
So Doctor Who wasn't, when it started, they did not think that it was going to be a popular thing.
No.
It was kind of just a silly show that they put on, and so they didn't preserve it. Because it was never meant to be this cult classic that it's become.
Yeah.
Do you think that might have made it more of a cult classic? Like,
I think so.
Yeah.
I definitely, because a lot of people laud the second Doctor as being this great Doctor, because he has the most lost episodes, is why I think it is. Because I've watched his episodes, and I've read all the novelizations, and I don't think he's that great of a Doctor.
Why don't you think he's that great of a Doctor?
I just think of him as kind of just, he's very silly, and like he doesn't take anything seriously, which I guess is a thing that, you know, whatever, but
Matt Smith, what? No.
Yeah. See, because I've only watched Christopher Eccleston from the first one, from the new one, so I don't know anything about Matt Smith's Doctor or anything like that. And I just really liked the first Doctor, and he was very smart, and he liked to play aloofness, but you could tell that he cared about his companions, where I feel like the second Doctor didn't really.
He's more like negligent almost.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like that either.
Yeah.
Like, be a good teammate, bro.
Yeah.
Could throw it to Hannah, so she's unprepared.
Sure. I mean, okay, yeah. So.
Yes. Please.
I don't read a lot of sci-fi.
Yeah.
I'm just going to start with that. But on my list of recommendations, since we already established World War Z by Max Brooks, would definitely recommend that. If you're a fan of horror, if you're a fan of zombies, it's a really, really well-written zombie book about the panic that ensues after the start of everything. Mm. It's about, it follows the survivors trying to escape the city that they're in.
Okay.
And it has a little, it touches a little bit on the military stuff, it touches a little bit on the civilian stuff, and it just goes through the whole thing. And it's a really, really good book. I like it much better than the movie. One of the few times where I watched the movie and was just like, I hate it.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that about that movie and the book.
Also on mine would be a Doctor Who book. It's the one with the Weeping Angels. I love that one.
Is it the name of the book, or is that like it's a description
called,
of what's happening?
I believe it's called Arms of the Angels, actually.
Okay. The one with the Weeping Angels.
Yep. I love it. Weeping Angels are my favorite villain, quote, in Doctor Who, because they're just scary. They're just unescapable, terrifying things. And they don't kill you, they send you back in time.
That seems rude. Before soap.
Yeah. So basically the way it's described is they feed off of the potential of your existence.
Hmm.
So they take you out of the timeline you're in, and they feed off the remaining potential that was in that timeline, and they send you back somewhere else.
Okay.
So it's they're the nicest, like, killers in the Doctor Who universe.
Can I ask a Max Brooks?
Yeah,
question.
Brooks, yeah.
So have you guys read the Sasquatch book that he wrote?
I haven't.
Is a Sasquatch book sci-fi or is it fantasy? Yeah. That's the sound I want to hear when I ask a question.
Hard question.
Cryptozoology.
Yeah.
I mean, from my experience, they're almost always horror.
Yes.
Because they're terrifying monsters. We can have horror sci-fi.
I think it would be close.
And the chupacabra is an alien's pet, right?
This is the chupacabra is a...
That's what they believe. The chupacabra is like, was the pet of an alien that got let loose on Earth and became part of our ecosystem. Or
no, it's part. It's a part of Mexican folklore.
I know that. That's it. That's how. That's what. That's a story. The goat sucker, chupacabra. Goat sucker. Yeah.
Chupacabra.
That's like what they believe happened and how he got here, right?
Yeah.
Is so, he was the I'm pet not of an alien.
Super familiar with it, but yeah, something similar because they are not from this world, but they live here now.
Yeah.
And I think I watched, I don't know, Ancient Aliens or something. Yeah.
Don't trust them.
What?
What?
That is my only source of news. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do now.
That's like, because actually I was talking about that with Mickey the other day, because it's like, it's kind of like when we were talking about mythology versus fantasy. If it's something that people believe to be true, it falls more under myths and legends versus...
So, mythological fantasy?
Mythological fantasy, yeah.
Would be what?
Yeah.
Cryptozoology?
Yeah.
I mean, but it's like zoology. There's like all science in the name.
I mean...
It has, yeah.
But it's
and
also the
sci-fi has claimed soft sciences and hard sciences.
That's fair.
So it should sci-fi, I guess.
I guess sci-fi. I guess that's where we're circling with that. Sasquatch, sci-fi.
Sasquatch is sci-fi. Sci-fi.
Yeah.
I like it.
Soft sci-fi.
Qualifier.
Why gotta be labeling stuff soft? Why couldn't there just be like hard sci-fi and regular sci-fi? Why they gotta make it soft? You know? Like, where's the middle?
For people like me.
Just people who want to, like, what?
I don't like science stuff. I love science stuff. I don't like reading sciencey stuff.
No?
I don't like reading lots of technical words that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. It's but you kind like of, to read made-up words.
It's kind of like you with fantasy names. Okay. I don't like sciencey stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Ready Player One
would
definitely be on my list of books to recommend to people. And then, surprisingly, the one hard, like, really hard sci-fi book that I loved, Into the Looking Glass by John Ringo.
Hmm.
It is super hard sci-fi. It's like the war and space travel and all of that kind of stuff. And very sciencey, but I love John Ringo because he is actually a scientist.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he has a degree and a background in science, but he's able to explain sciencey stuff very nicely for laymen.
Okay.
So his characters are able to use all this scientific jargon, and then it's just explained super fast but super easy.
Okay.
And I enjoyed the book a lot. Okay. Surprisingly.
And that was Into the Looking Glass, you
said? Into the Looking Glass. I always try and call it The Looking Glass Wars because it's a series, but that is a completely different series.
There's a series called The Looking Glass Wars.
Yes. It's an alternate telling of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really what I thought you were talking about when you said Into the Looking Glass.
Yeah, which is why it always messes my brain up.
Yeah, I get that.
So a looking glass is a telescope?
A mirror or something. In this case, they're basically stargates.
So yeah, I think a mirror. I think a looking glass.
A looking glass is a mirror.
A looking glass is a mirror.
Yeah, a looking glass is a mirror. Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at yourself in a glass.
Huh. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't really track for me, but okay.
A spy glass is a telescope.
Is it?
Because you spy things through the glass. That's literally.
I don't know what the word spy means, I don't think. Also, why didn't they just use mirror? Like, that's where I'm stuck. Like, there's a really nice word for that exact thing.
Because mirror has
the looking jimbly.
The looking glass just sounds fanciful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. I don't want to be fanciful.
Mirror wasn't always a word.
True.
So looking glass existed before mirror?
I think so. The glass that you look into.
Okay.
I mean, well, you'd have to look up.
You'd have to look at entomology.
I think like the first mirror would be like a pond, right? Like,
I mean,
I don't know. We don't call I wonder what wheels were called when they were first invented, right? Like, we don't call it that. Like, ug or whatever they cavemen.
It's a fun word, Dustin.
I'm pounding the table because I'm just imagining drums as the word for wheel.
We can hear you.
Fanciful usually translates.
Yeah, those are mine.
Thank you for your recommendations. I appreciate it.
How about you, Dustin?
I don't have any recommendations.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I got lost.
Do you have any sci-fi recommendations
or people? Or your favorite things in the genre?
So I haven't read a lot in the genre, and I guess the things I read I've liked, so I would recommend them. I read the Ender series, the Ender's Quartet. I skipped the Shadow of Ender because everybody says to skip it.
Okay.
The Beans novel, I think. Have you read the Enders?
I haven't. No.
There's a little weird sidekick in the first one, or a kid that he's in school with, and then there's a novel that's from his perspective.
Oh, I see.
Everybody says skip it, so I skipped it.
Fair.
I don't miss it, but I don't know what I would be missing. So,
right.
Anyway, the Stainless Steel Rat series is something I trickled in as a kid. The books were always on sale, like at the book fair or whatever, and so I picked them up here and there, and they were fun. I like the comedy action.
I've been collecting the Stainless Steel Rat for a long time, but I haven't read any of it yet.
I've been keeping a lookout for the books for you.
Thank you.
In the Mortal Engines series?
Oh, okay.
That's sci-fi, right?
Yeah, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And I liked that a lot. But I like YA stuff a lot. And that was really adventure-y and kind of dystopian. It is dystopian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, let me see. And I read a book called The Star Is My Destination, which is this weird, like, isolation romance on a ship. I don't know how I found it. I think I was looking up dystopian or survival horror.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it popped up because they're kind of surviving in space.
Yeah.
And it was like, nice. I don't know, it was weird. I like isolation horror where they like really 47 meters down, right? Have you guys watched that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just right there in that little limited space. And I just love that.
Yeah.
I love it, but it just makes me, I watched like The Descent and stuff like that because I love it, but it also just makes me so anxious.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
That's why we love it.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I used to, my previous jobs, I worked at the cable company and I ran gas lines before that. So I was like under houses in crawl spaces, like 8 hours a day. And I kind of like that, like little tiny space thing.
Isolation horror makes me real crazy. I'm not a big fan of it.
No.
Oh, if you like isolation horror and if you like podcasts at all, The White Vault.
I think you've recommended this.
So amazing. Listen to it. It's so good.
Is it also sci-fi?
No, it's set in modern time.
It has nothing to do with like our episode, but it's really cool.
Yeah, it's like a research station that,
they're researching science.
They are researching science, though, so yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I got your back, so.
Thank you. But yeah, it's so good if you like isolation horror. Do you have, I feel like I interrupted you. But.
No, I was gonna talk about Foundation.
Okay.
Because I want to read Foundation, but also, we've talked about this before, like, Foundation is one of our like most donated books. We get so many copies. So it's either really great and everybody has read it, or it's, I don't know, not great and everybody's giving it away.
Just like, get rid of it.
I don't know.
People read it and they're just like, eh.
Yeah. But there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of the Foundations. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big series, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think it just has like 4 books in it.
Is it?
I think there's like some sub stuff too to it.
There's, yeah.
I've had to look it up before.
Expanded universe type stuff. I don't know.
But anyway, I'm curious about that. Have you guys read anybody read Foundation?
Nope.
How do we have so many copies of it?
I don't know.
It's one of those books that just exists.
There's no explaining it.
There's no explaining it. It's kind of like how everyone knows Bohemian Rhapsody, but nobody ever remembers learning Bohemian Rhapsody.
How do you learn Bohemian Rhapsody?
I don't know. You just know
it's a genetic memory.
Okay, yeah, that's actually it. I don't have... I would like recommendations, really, because I don't read enough. I read enough sci-fi because I'm happy with the amount of books I read. Sure.
Do you like short stories?
Yeah, I do.
So there is sci-fi elements in it. I can't remember if every single story in the anthology is sci-fi.
Okay.
But The Illustrated Man by Ray Bradbury.
Okay.
Highly recommend.
Like Bradbury is a sci-fi writer.
Yeah, right,
at the core.
The Illustrated Man is phenomenal. It's just a bunch of short little stories, and they're all super, super good.
Mm.
Really fast read.
Love that it. Might be a great way to break into sci-fi too, like because when it drags on, and not drags on, but when it builds upon itself to where you're having to remember the name of a bolt that they named in the first paragraph, right later on in the book, it gets to be a lot.
The only reason that wasn't on my list was because I don't remember if every single story in it is sci-fi or if he threw in a few fantasy ones.
Hmm.
Because it's been a bit since I've read it.
Okay.
But I remember loving every single story that was in that book. Okay.
That sounds good.
I was going on my red shelf, and it seems like I'm going to use the word classic again here. Hmm. Because most of the ones that I have read are considered classics, I think.
I feel like you could get in a fight real easy with a sci-fi person by calling a sci-fi book a classic.
Yeah.
Or not calling it
calling it a classic. They seem,
like you said, really, they take themselves seriously. Not to be mean to sci-fi readers. Yeah. Let's just not be gatekeepers, guys.
Right, yeah. Let's not do that. I don't like that, yeah. iRobot and Nightfall by Isaac Asimov. iRobot is so good. And it's actually a collection of smaller stories all within the same.
Ever since I watched the movie, I have wanted to read the books. Like, I'm sure they are so much better than the movie
was. Yeah, yeah.
Is that, like, the robotic laws come from Asimov, right?
From iRobot, yeah.
From that book specifically. Mm-hmm, yeah. So when they reference it in every.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it comes from.
That's what it comes from, yeah. And
pretty
it's,
fancy recommendation.
Because, like, they always with the movies, they try to make it just like this one big story about a robot uprising, but. It was like a bunch of small like vignettes just about what it's like to have robots like as an everyday item, like in your household. You know what I mean?
What's vignette mean?
I use the word vignette.
I'm sorry, I always ask if I don't know a word. Because I want to learn
like
the words.
It's like a stage scene.
Yes.
They use vignette a lot in theater.
A brief evocative description, account, or episode.
Evocative?
Mm-hmm.
What does evocative mean?
It invokes emotion.
Okay.
Invoking of emotion.
So it's like a skit almost?
Yeah.
Is that?
It's like a short story, but a little bit more condensed, and they're all about the same thing versus a bunch of short stories about different things.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So a bunch of short stories in a world that don't particularly connect or connect at a higher function level.
Yeah. It's like they're all connected by this new technology, the robot that just like came out.
Okay.
And it's written more, it's not written like a short story collection where each little portion has their own title. It's written like a novel, but it's just like, here's a little clippet, here's a little snippet of this person's life with a robot, here's a little snippet.
They're all part of the same narrative. They're just not, they're not a interconnecting story, but they're part of this same spot in time.
Connected at a high level, not like socially connected.
Yeah. Right. It's not like, oh, this character is going to keep popping up in all of these stories, but it's this city, here's snippets of life throughout the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vignette.
Yeah.
Okay, neat. Yeah. Learned a couple words. Yeah.
The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury. And then The Time Machine and The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells.
I do like The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I like The Invisible Man a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, I wouldn't have thought to put that in sci-fi, but it is very sci-fi.
Is it? I've never read it. What is
there's an experiment who's experimenting with camouflage, like, and he accidentally turned himself invisible.
So would Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde be
sci-fi
horror?
Yeah, technically.
And also, like, the Invisible Man, like, the main character, honestly, he's a bastard. He's the worst.
In the movies, he's always like terrible. A really terrible guy, right?
Yeah, and he's a terrible, terrible main character. But for some reason, I still love the story because it also has a little bit of horror in it because it's like set in a small town where he goes to like hide away because the police are after him. And like just, you know, these small village people are like, what's this guy's deal? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Interesting. And those, I think those are all what people would call classics.
Yeah.
In an inarguable way, right?
Yeah.
Asimov's laws and stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty core.
Yeah, especially since that one, especially since it's referenced so often in other works, I think that would solidly classify it as a classic, I think.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. And I know we're like running probably long on time.
We're getting a little bit long, but we can go a little bit longer.
Is there like a most important or a group of most important sci-fi books?
I wouldn't say so. I think some fans of sci-fi might say that there are, and I would give a list of it, but I don't.
Yeah. I wouldn't say, like, sets of books. I would say there are, like, it's kind of the same thing as, like, it's a, like a touchstone of, like, fantasy would be Tolkien.
Okay.
A touchstone of sci-fi would be Asimov, Bradbury, like...
Arthur C. Clarke,
like... But I watched this thing called Prophets of Science Fiction, where they just talk about the things that basically those people, like, came up with, and they're now a thing mm-hmm. in our world, and it's just, they were just so smart, I guess.
Well, and I mean, even the classics like The Invisible Man, Frankenstein, mm-hmm. yeah. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, while those can also cross into the genre of horror, like, mm-hmm. they were also helping to pave the way into sci-fi.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a connection with, like, understanding early science and fear, and maybe that's because...
Oh, I think there is, because a lot of things that we have old horror stories about are things that we now have more explanation for, because the more you are explained something, the less scary it is.
Right, yeah.
But adventuring into the unknown, looking at things that you don't understand, that's human nature, that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I would agree, yeah. Not knowing something is more scary than... All right, does anybody have a recommendation for someone new to the genre? If they're just getting into this sci-fi, they're like, I'm not sure if I like sci-fi.
Oh, she does. I...
I want to recommend McClendon Syndrome.
Yeah.
Because it's the first sci-fi book that I ever read. I think it's a good one. It has, you know, elements of like Firefly, where it's like a ship, a ragtag group of people trying to, you know, eke by in this outskirts of space. And it's vampires in space.
I do love me some vampires in space.
Yeah.
Is there more than one book about vampires in space?
I'm sure there's got to be. I
was startled. That's interesting. Man, I would be so mad if vampires got into space.
Oh, we're right.
Oh, I would just... McClendon Syndrome by Robert A. Frieza? F-R-E-Z-Z-A.
Okay.
Well, nobody does. So
yeah. Nobody does. Okay. It's fine, yeah.
You spelled it. Thank you. How old is that book, do you know?
It was published in 1993.
Okay. Okay, because I don't think I would want to read about like I wouldn't want to read like a 1950s book about vampires in space for some reason.
Oh, come on!
I don't like old timey vampires. Yeah. I like new vampires.
Yeah, because the thing that made me pick up McClendon Syndrome was that vampirism is a disease that you can get in the future, and you can only subsist off of blood and chocolate chip cookies.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, catch me with my plates and plates of chocolate chip cookies.
Yep. Yeah.
I hope there's a space blade.
Yeah. Space blade.
Well, the girl in it that has the McClendon syndrome has a kind of less, like a lesser degree of whatever it's called.
So she's space blade.
Because she can eat pasta.
Oh my goodness.
She can also eat
plain pasta, no sauce.
So this is a space opera, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. I mean, yeah, definitely.
Is it funny? Is this a funny book?
It's funny.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was like, I don't know how they're going to like make only eating chocolate chip cookies and pasta serious, but I need to understand right now.
No, yeah.
Okay, that's a great recommendation. I think I want to read that for sure.
I love it.
Mine was going to be The Martian by Andy Weir. I just think it's super accessible and it's really funny and survival. It's also survival science fiction too. So I like that. No horror in it, but just like trying to survive alone on Mars. And so, I love anything that is set on Mars, honestly.
So survival, isolation. Mm-hmm. It's a little funny too, right?
It is yeah. Yeah.
The Martian. Okay. That's mm-hmm. that's a pretty robust and accessible isn't a super important word mm-hmm. to give me when you're talking about sci-fi or fantasy.
Yeah. Cause even though the main character is like a scientist, it never felt like it was being dumbed down, but it also felt like I understood what he was saying when he was talking about science. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is Jurassic Park sci-fi?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately. No.
What? What? Oh, it's a classic.
Okay. Let me roll it back. I love Jurassic Park.
Have you read the books?
I've read the first book.
And you didn't get to this?
I have a hard time with series.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I have a hard time committing to series. Like, a lot of times they just overwhelm me when I'm like, look, there's 16 books and I just don't want to read all of them.
I have, like, the opposite version of being overwhelmed. Like, I overwhelmingly need to read the next one.
I read a lot of first books in series and have every intention to go read another one and just never get around to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you didn't like Jurassic Park the book?
I liked Jurassic Park the book. It's so weird to me that it's sci-fi because I have such a hard line for what sci-fi is in my brain.
To me, though, I wouldn't consider Jurassic Park sci-fi.
But they're using science.
They are using dinosaurs. And it's fiction. But it's more like a techno thriller. It's kind of, this is why genres, I know.
that same guy wrote the Prey book where the nanobots take people's bodies apart, right? Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, that's sci-fi.
Yeah.
Why isn't it in the sci-fi section? What's happening here?
Because it's like, well, I mean, I don't know. I've never read the Prey one, so I can't really speak to that. But like, it's kind of like technology that exists in the day that it, I don't know.
Right.
It's like exists in our world in reality versus something that's being speculated about that's
okay
futuristic or something.
I mean, okay, we have cloning technology, but we have not yet been able to replicate dead things. So technically, the technology doesn't exist. Right. We could argue this all.
We just got to find the right mosquito.
Exactly.
Right.
That's all that we're missing is just the right mosquito.
We've spent so long asking if we could do it that we didn't stop and ask if we should.
That's interesting. I was wondering that because the Prey is about like nanobots that I don't know, become people almost.
Okay,
it's
okay.
Kind of confusing because it's all science-y.
Yeah.
All right.
And I was just burning that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Let's wrap up the book club. So our next book read is going to be Devolution by Max Brooks.
Oh, okay.
Massacre of Mount Rainier. Well, it's the Mount Rainier Massacre.
Okay.
That's what it is, yeah.
Cool.
So that's going to be for, I didn't write my date down. It's May. What's the first Friday in May? But
one of those days.
Yeah, it's the
First Friday in May.
First Friday in May. There was like lots of technical issues this last week with book clubs, so we actually didn't get to meet virtually like we were trying to. So, but we're going to try it again in May.
We can do it.
Yeah.
By the time we get this all figured out, like really good.
Yeah.
We'll be able to meet in person.
Exactly. Though. Yeah. And that's all what we really want.
Is that all that people want is to meet in person? I disagree.
I feel like that's wrong.
It's like the whole core of why I read books is makes people go away.
Yeah, yeah.
Put in front of your face and not make eye contact.
Yeah. To be read?
Okay. So on my to be read is What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky by Leslie Neka Arima. I listened to the short story, the same title. It's a book of short stories. I listened to the short story called that on LeVar Burton Reads. And it was so good.
That podcast.
Love that podcast, yes. And it was so good. And so I just want to read them.
The rest of it. Cool.
The Romulan Way by Diane Duane and Peter Morwood, which is the second book in a series called Verhansu, which is about the Romulan Empire in Star Trek. So I just I just put it on there because that's the next thing I'm going to read.
I love it.
My to be read isn't going to be super interesting because I don't know the name of the book.
Oh, okay.
I have been reading such like heavy stuff that I need to move back into. Like, I'm going to just read a couple Reacher books. Oh. I don't want to call it junk, but it's just really easy stuff to read. Yeah. And I really just need a break from looking words up.
Right.
I just want some action. I want something to burn through.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look in my. I'm going to read a couple Reacher books because I've been trickling that in, so that when I have to have that escape, I have it.
There you got it.
Mine is actually a nonfiction book that was recommended to me by my Discord group, and I can't remember the author's name, and I apologize, but it's just called Finish, and it's a short read written by a psychologist on the reasons why people don't finish the things that they start and how to motivate yourself to finish things.
Interesting. Oh, that sounds really good.
I thought that sounded really cool, and I'm going to look it up and read it.
Very nice. Yeah.
We'll see if I finish it.
You should just get some OCD, and then you'll have to finish everything. That's pretty amazing.
But my OCD works different than that.
I have The Wall by John Lancaster, which is like a dystopian future about a city that's enclosed in a wall. I mean,
how come it's never a city outside of the wall?
Because it's a dystopian future and that city would be destroyed immediately. I like it. Enclosed in a wall. Yeah.
And it's about a guy who is a guard on the wall to keep people out.
Basically. Aptly named.
Yeah.
The Wall. Yeah.
It sounds interesting. And then the other one is called City by Clifford Simak. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's been on my to-read list, actually, for a really long time, but I was going through my bookshelves today, and I saw it again, and I was like, oh, yeah, I meant to read this one. And it's basically set really far in the future, where all of humanity has died off, and only dogs live on, or, I mean, wild animals, but it's from the perspective of a dog. And
I love that.
Yeah, and, it, and an alien race comes and finds Earth. It's just dogs.
I want to read that.
And then they have the technology that they can communicate with the dogs. So,
talking dogs would be great to communicate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I bet they would be super fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how about currently reading?
I am currently reading The Cosmology of Monsters by Sean Hamill. And it's a book about a kid who becomes friends with this weird monster. And there's murders in the town. And there's, you know, lots of mystery. And the family that the kid is part of runs a haunted house year-round. So it's really like horror-steeped, just layers and layers of horror and mystery. But
nice.
He's best friends with this monster, and it communicates in a weird monster-y way.
Nice, nice.
It's kind of neat. It's very neat. It's an interesting read. It's getting a little romantic for no reason. But
yep, they always got to put that in.
Yeah, I don't know why they, like, all of a sudden, bam, people are having sex. It's like, what? It was just a murder 3 pages ago. Guy's arm got cut.
They haven't even cleaned up the bloodstains.
Yeah. I mean, how are you having? All right.
I'm currently reading The Hollow Kingdom.
I need to read that one, too.
I don't know what that is.
It's the zombie apocalypse told from the perspective of a domesticated crow.
So when I talked about it last time.
Oh. She was reading it last time.
I don't listen to these episodes. You guys know that, right?
But you were here.
I say lots of words. I don't store them all.
It sounds like the cutest book ever.
Yeah. Oh, and my God. It's really fun, yeah.
Is there a genre of, like, animal perspectives that you're getting into? Like,
no, maybe we should think about it, because I don't think it's... I think it's a new thing that's developing, because I've never heard of these before now. Or
is there's like, I actually follow a bunch of like book challenges online where they like give you prompts to find a book or whatever. And on quite a few of them over the course of the years have always had like a non-human narrator is the, and so that is a kind of a book that you can read. So like Jax, who wrote the Redwall series, all of that's from the perspective of mice.
The Art of Racing in the Rain is from the perspective of a dog.
Yeah.
I mean, but those are like humanized versions of those animals,
That's true. Yeah.
The Art of Racing in the Rain is a dog. A dog, an actual dog.
Huh.
A domesticated dog.
I've never... Yeah. I mean, but does it think in like... I don't know.
A really good job of having it very... Like, it does almost feel like you're reading it from the perspective of a non-human.
Okay.
Yeah, that because Watership Down by Adams would be one also.
Yeah,
because that's from the perspective of rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read any of that.
It's so bizarre. That one I can't say I actually liked it because it was so bizarre. Like the way they talk about the world around them, I was just like, I don't know what's happening. But
all right, who else is reading?
Oh, sorry, I'm reading If I Did It.
Yeah, that was a recommendation I got from me to. The manager of the store that got to you.
Yeah.
I love that book.
Yeah. It's incredibly frustrating, but it's also really good. So
I like the backstory to the book. That's what makes me love it the most.
Yeah. That's the
Goldman's like snuck the if in the I did it.
In the
it
just,
I love it.
The front cover design is great. So.
But you're not enjoying it?
No, I do. I like it a lot, but it's like, it's frustrating just because like reading him talk about his history with Nicole and everything.
Yeah.
I'm just like, anyway, it's annoying, but it's also really good and like fascinating.
I'm actually reading a graphic novel right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Dragon Age series. I'm reading the first five. I got the collection of the first five graphic novels of the series.
Nice.
So I'm reading through that because I love it. And I'm a big Dragon Age fan.
Very nice. I guess that wraps it up for us. Thanks for listening.
Catch you all next month.
Next month, yeah.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.